Welcome, this is Gary Parr, Editorial Director, Maintenance Technology Magazine, and this time I have with me Stan DeVries. And Stan is the Senior Director, Solutions Architecture, Industry Solutions at Schneider Electric Software. Stan is responsible for identifying, defining, developing, and helping to implement innovative yet reproducible architecture patterns and reference architectures for the company customers who implement operations centers and embedded operations business processes. Stan has been deeply involved in the digital oil field development since 2002 and in intelligent refineries since 1995. He has consulted with a diverse range of national, independent, and supermajor oil and gas companies with a focus on changing teamwork for improved operations, HSE, and business performance. Stan has also consulted with pharmaceutical, specialty chemical, and power generation clients since 2003 with a similar focus. Stan has 42 years of experience designing, applying, marketing, selling, automation, and collaboration systems, and his application experience encompasses digital oil fields, oil movements, collaboration centers, refinery and petrochemical information systems, and manufacturing information technology. Stan, thanks. Welcome.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Yes. Wow, that's quite a list of things there. You've been in a few refineries, I can tell.
Yeah.
Well, Stan is a co-author of an article that we have in the November issue of Maintenance Technology. And the catalyst for that article and for this podcast was an illustration that I saw in a presentation that a Schneider representative gave that showed a pathway from data, big data, internet, industrial Internet of Things, whatever you want to call it, but basically a pathway that would take companies from simply acquiring the data to wisdom, to actually knowing what it is, what it does, and what the information can do for a company so that intelligent decisions can be made. And it's been my understanding and conclusion I've reached in talking to a lot of people that every time I talk about Internet of Things with someone or big data, any of those things, people get excited because it's the latest buzzword and everybody's doing it and everybody has sensors and all those things. But when I ask the second and third question to try to understand what they're doing with the data and how they're implementing it to really make a difference in their manufacturing, the eyes start to glaze over people start fumbling and bumbling, and I just keep reaching the conclusion that a lot of people, and there are some, there's no question, there are some who are making effective use of this technology, but a lot of people just are not to the point where they really are implementing the knowledge that's available to them and using it to make a difference. And so, Stan, the first thing I have for you is my assessment accurate? Is that what you're experiencing? And to what degree do you experience it?
Absolutely. I think the second issue that a lot of these customers have, if they're making some early progress, is understanding end-user adoption. That if they have figured out something useful from these mountain of numbers, can they get the busy traveling users to actually use whatever was installed?
And that's, yeah, okay. So that becomes one of the hurdles. And that was the second thing I had for you. What prevents people from, what are some of the major hurdles that prevent people from using this data? Is it resources? What is keeping them from, and I'm talking about getting the data all the way to, hey, this is telling us something. Here are the trends we're seeing. Here's the errors we're seeing. Here's where we can improve. Here's where we can gain efficiency. Those kinds of things, and then being able to implement that. What's preventing people from getting to that end?
Well, I would see three main things. Number one, the old computer joke that if garbage goes into the computer, then garbage comes out of the computer. Is the information sufficiently trustworthy? It's complete. It's accurate. It's whatever is needed for users to trust it, number one. Number two, is the information sufficiently useful? Just because the project champion said, hey, it's done, it's tested, it's ready to use, it may not be sufficiently ready in a format that helps somebody at 2 o'clock on Sunday morning or whatever the situation is to use it. And then the third one is we tend to forget that when you've got this kind of system that is bubbling up all this information and knowledge, you're actually broadcasting failure. And the users need to develop a trust in themselves, their teammates, etc., to work in this environment. It's not a new concept, but we find that this industrial Internet of Things magnifies the culture change, team change problem.
That's interesting. I'd not heard that stated that way before. So it really points out where the errors are at. If people look at the information and understand it, where the errors are at, where things can be changed, and then it really puts the pressure on people to work together to make that difference.
Exactly. One example that I find kind of interesting, we just finished an in-depth consulting study for a major petroleum refiner, and they do a solid job on inspections, reliability-based inspections, and things like that. But there is an underlying culture that if there's an improvement, it's a criticism of the past. And that's just who they are. So what part of what we have to figure out, both the end users and their technology champions and ourselves, is how do we somehow gently but firmly get the users past that as we're asserting a better way to use that inspection information, to get the inspection information. We're talking about, for example, in one plant, over 100,000 corrosion and thickness sensors. Now, how do you, as human beings, make sense out of all that?
I'm not going to start. That's interesting. That culture word will not go away. That human nature, desire to find fault, to point fingers, to defend territories, all of those things. That's a hard nut to crack. And this is obviously putting shining a pretty bright light on that and forcing it if we're actually going to take advantage of this technology.
Yes.
The other concern I have with this whole thing is the small and mid-sized companies. Now, you work with some pretty large firms, and you know, I'm sure they would say they don't have the resources, but in relative terms, they have significant resources for dealing with data and can benefit on a massive scale, I'm sure, from anything that comes out of that. What about the small and mid-sized companies when it comes to Internet of Things, big data, and really understanding what they have? Where are you seeing those companies? What resources do they have outside of what's within their company, outside of the one IT guy that's scrambling around trying to keep machines running? What options do they have, and where can they go?
Yeah, we're seeing actually a dramatic shift at even the large companies, the largest oil and gas companies, the largest food companies, etc. They cannot retain the dedicated person or persons on site like they used to anymore. So we're seeing from this kind of technology support this almost the same challenge from the small manufacturer as the large, that there is a growing expectation that whatever this technology is going to be, that there is no need for an on-site specialist. Well, there are specialists on site, but not a person who spends more than 50% of their time maintaining and evolving this. There may be somebody in the corporation. They may have a supplier under contract, but not a person that's dedicated in each plant. I don't care if it's in a beautiful location of the world or an ugly location of the world. And I find that that's a dramatic shift in the last 6 to 12 months. Now, to come directly to the question, what resources or what options are available, whether you're small or large, the real answer is some form of cloud. And that's a scary prospect for a lot of our customers who are in highly regulated industries. Either they're in power or oil and gas and what's called critical infrastructure, or they're in life sciences or food and beverage with ever-increasing regulations, the idea of having a portion of the architecture and their information outside of the plant fence is pretty daunting. But what we're seeing is that that information is not necessarily outside of the corporation fence. It could be somewhere in a headquarters room. It could be in a regional office, wherever. And it's still cloud, but it's not cloud like with the main commercial cloud providers. But the main thing is that a lot of the technology is required. The sensors have to be in the plant. But a lot of the other technologies required does not have to be physically in the plant. Now, in order to make that work reliably, we've learned that there are still has to be some of the technology, some cabinet with blinking lamps, as one customer called it, inside the plant. But you don't have to have a person, except for installation, maybe major upgrades or repairs to the hardware, you don't have to have a dedicated person. So I believe that that is a real enabler for small and large users of industrial Internet of Things to rethink the physical location of this technology, that it doesn't have to be, unless it's absolutely dictated by their corporate policies, inside the plant fence.
And do you see companies getting past that immediate reaction to, no, not outside my building? Do you see them getting more comfortable with that? Or is there still a lot of resistance?
Well, there's still a lot of resistance, but what we're observing is an acceleration of customers going for switching from no and never to yes and right now. And we see that across the spectrum of small, medium, and large manufacturers. So it's very hard to predict, you know, this curve of adoption, if you will, but We're totally respectful for certain customers to say, yeah, we've studied this carefully. We know why we are going to keep our policy the way it is. But more and more, we are seeing customers saying, okay, we've realized that we're already using this approach for some of our other company-sensitive information that is, you know, subject to local government scrutiny, et cetera. So this still makes us nervous, but you know, the legitimate reasons why we had to not go that way have gone away. The other problem they have is they have the business imperative. They have to find a way to get things done. So you know, we all work together as suppliers and end users to minimize the risks, to show what's called stewardship of the data, but once we get past that, people are saying, okay, I get it. There's no way that I'm going to try to attract or retain the kind of talent that would be required in each site, nor an army somewhere in my enterprise. I need to think of a different way to evolve and grow and maintain this kind of solution. So, yeah, we're seeing a steady, I would say even acceleration of adoption of this hybrid cloud, private cloud, there's all kinds of terms for this stuff, approach to this kind of technology.
And of course, hand in hand with that goes cybersecurity. Do the people you talk to, your customers, are they sensitive and keenly aware of the cybersecurity issues, or are they hoping that'll get taken care of by someone else? What are you reading there?
Well, first of all, they're very sensitive to cybersecurity issues. They are hoping that somebody will take care of it and make the problem go away. But part of what we see, and it's not just us as a supplier, is the community, is an education on a cybersecurity strategy. We meet customer manufacturers, large and small, a subset who they may not recognize the term, but it's called air gap by the cybersecurity community. There's an assumption that the plant and the plant information systems are just not connected to somewhere else. And that is not practical. That's not true. And I'm talking about legitimate connections, not illegitimate connections. So what we have to do, all of us as a community, is educate them on something called defense in depth. And there's enough solid experimentation and proof by sections of the United States government and other country governments that that is the practical, correct way to go. And then once the audience understands that, then the burden's on the supplier to show how they've got the experience. They've got, it's just like quality. They're managing the cybersecurity, like quality or safety, and being good stewards of the information and the protection system.
Well, I'm glad to hear the awareness is there, because that I would suggest maybe even 2 years ago, 3 years ago, that was not the case.
Agreed.
Okay. All right. I'm not nuts. Every now and then I like to check and see if I'm nuts. So.
Well, the scariest thing for a supplier is to, because it takes time to launch and staff up or whatever for a new service or a new product or whatever, and to have these customers go from no, never to now, almost overnight, how do you plan for that? But that's a challenge that we all have.
Yeah, that statement there really surprised me, that you would, you know, that you're experiencing people going from one end of the spectrum to the other and not stopping off in the middle somewhere. That's that tells me there's some significant business pressure and manufacturing process pressure that is forcing them to just basically suck it up and go for it.
That's right.
In your article, I enjoyed the article. You talked about,
thank you,
people in enterprises having to communicate, and people have different areas having their own set of files and their own data and set up in their way and what works best for their processes. But one of the issues is to have that information work throughout the enterprise. And you talked about federated database approach as a way to accomplish that. Give us kind of a layman's rundown of how that works and what the issues are.
Okay. I'll take the example of, let's say, maintenance users with their information, accounting or financial users, various kinds of process or equipment engineering users, and they each need to have differing amounts of detail about a set of equipment. And in their structure, where an accountant doesn't need to know about bearings and seals and O-rings and things like that, but they need certain amount of information, like the number of hours run, is it in service or not, all kinds of things like that, that you've got a different structure of information intentionally for these different users, and in whatever software they've been using, they call what seems to be the same thing by different names. And that's a living problem, right? So if you call it pump 1, pump 01, I don't care if you call it mango or apple, it's going to be different. And what this federated approach says, let it be like that. As long as, so don't try to come up with yet another universal name or in structure of information that is sufficient, equally useless to everybody. Let them each have and evolve their names and structures of information with whatever detail they need, but provide a translation, a living, easy to maintain translation between all those structures and naming. And that's what this computer science term called federated database. It's not a database. It's the main emphasis is on federation. It allows these separate sets of names and structures of information live and evolve, but makes the right kinds of associations and name translations between them. Now, you're not going to translate everything because you don't need to. The finance community does not need to know about the O-ring or the seal. But the whatever is appropriate is translated automatically online all the time and kept translated, and that's the approach. And we find that that has been extremely useful. We have been applying this on a smaller scale between safety systems, quality systems, maintenance systems, etc., for a long time, and we just find that this technique is now even more important for industrial Internet of Things.
And from the description, highly flexible, highly adaptable, expandable, upgradable, all those things?
Yes. And I have participated, as you read in my bio, in quite a few standards organizations, and I break them into two camps. There are the kind of standards organizations that are, in my opinion, very pragmatic. and trying to add value to whatever way that information is described or called or whatever, and they provide some kind of additional information to be sure, but it lives, it coexists with the existing information. And then I find another community of people who really work very hard on trying to come up with a new universal way of naming and structuring. And I have a bias. My observation is that second camp, you come up with something that's very good for new construction, but is not practical for living plants that are using this year in, year out, that you're constantly putting in a new model or brand of a pump, or you're doing whatever. The pump is smarter. It's got more things to it, whatever, it's just too hard and not easy enough to use for an answer of all things, which is the opposite to federation of information.
Now, you and your co-author, Tim Soule, he's in Australia, and obviously you co-authored this, so you communicate with some regularity, I would assume. Does he experience the same trends in Australia that you're seeing here in the States?
Absolutely. First of all, he and I are global people. We both travel heavily. I've traveled to 55 countries, and this year already 180,000 miles. And also we deal with multiple industries. So he tends to focus more on the food and beverage, life science and mining. I tend to focus more on infrastructure like major tunnels, airports, oil and gas, power generation. But we do overlap, and we compare notes. We speak to each other several times a week, and we compare information about these trends several times a month. And yes, we're seeing the same pattern all over the world.
Didn't realize you were both doing operating on such a global basis. So, but he's doing other industries, and so this is an issue, and this is experiences that we're having. No, it really doesn't matter what the industry then.
Exactly. There are people who obviously know very much about their own industry. They have a high respect for the maintenance or operations challenges in their industry. And out of ignorance, they may not realize how sophisticated maintenance practices are implemented in other industries. And I'll give you an example. Somebody in the oil and gas industry, they understand the complexity of a petroleum refinery or a petrochemical plant. They may not realize that the number of devices and the maintenance strategies in a world-class mining operation is equal or more complicated than a petroleum refinery.
Talk to me about the people who are looking at this because it's the hot buzzword. They're looking at big data, Internet of Things, Industry 4.0, just because they read about it and hear about it, but really haven't delved into it. What should they know about where they can go with it, what this can do for them, what are the benefits? What little carrots can you hang out there that would entice them to get involved and start to gear up?
Well, number one, it may sound like a marketing phrase, but you're eliminating or reducing what's called the value leaks. The guesses that a planner or scheduler is making on the raw material that can be selected or purchased, but they don't have a sufficiently detailed or trustworthy understanding of the maintenance schedule of the plant equipment or the capability of the plant, all the way through where, in our observation, a lot of requests from operations to maintenance are rejected, and requests from maintenance to operations are rejected. You know, not now, we've got a critical order to complete or whatever. All the way through the internal supply chain are drastically reduced. Number two, those you say, well, that sounds great. How do you do that? The whole idea is about what one supplier calls anticipatory, that you are not just reacting better or reacting earlier, you're preventing. Or if a good opportunity comes, you're taking advantage, even if it's just a change of the weather. Compressors work better at colder air temperatures, for example. So what we see is that it's not an exercise in adding more information to the existing way that work gets done. It's about using the information to transform, and that sounds like a grand word, the way that work gets done. But what we find is the transformation can be very simple. If all we're doing is changing when people are acting on the information, which is before real time, for desired or undesired situations, where they're acting on it, you've got typically either remote contractors or you've got traveling experts who move between site to site or however it works. Which person? Does that one specialist always have to be involved in that decision? And then finally, something that's really a key question from our customer senior managers, how? You know, I've had one man scream at me, he says, there is no teamwork without team. Well, yeah, of course. No, he says, look, he says, we put in all these systems and these people are not acting in a team way. They're each getting information that they think they need out of the system and trying to make their own decisions, but in their busyness, they're not really working together. They're not disagreeing, they're just busy. So the when, where, which, and how change. And you don't have to make all four, just change one of those. But think in terms of how you would change the more valuable part of work. For example, when should you adjust a maintenance schedule and what's the possible impact on the production schedule? There's no simple mathematical answer to that. How do you shape that decision? And on and on. Okay, so we believe that getting the users to start thinking in as simple a way as possible about the work first, change the way that you're going to work in a way that the culture can absorb, then the rest of it is relatively easy for us technical types to figure out what information you need, all the cybersecurity and business continuity and all that fun stuff is necessary to have it sufficiently trustworthy.
Well, Stan, I sure appreciate it. Enjoyed the article and learned even more this time around. So I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us and share what's in your head. Thank you.
My pleasure.